We have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of a Purely Arsenal sit-down podcast, and I'm joined by my regular Neil Shah to discuss a 5-0 smashing of Palace. We're back, Neil. Me and you are back. Arsenal, hopefully, are back, but time will tell. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. It's good to be back. I've been away for a while, and it's good just to be back and talk to you again, Jack. And let's try and analyse this one and see where we're going. Hopefully upwards, hopefully.
Yeah, fingers crossed. We've had a tough month or so where we've done a few pods here and there, but what was it, 1-7? It was a slump. It was definitely a big slump. We had that 2-week break in Dubai. Felt like forever, didn't it, that break, really? Probably because of coming off of, you know, a defeat and you'd get knocked out of the FA Cup by Liverpool. It felt pretty deflated, I think, collectively, and looking for some answers, really. And we'll talk about whether we felt we got those in this game. Obviously, it was a pretty resounding 5-0 victory. I mean, I don't think we've had a more comfortable game all season. I certainly don't think Palace were up to much. Though I do think we should mitigate it with, I think it was less than or around a month ago that Palace drew 2-2 at City. They really should have beaten Liverpool at home, and they got a red card, an unjust red card, and Liverpool ended up winning that game 2-1. But for me, Liverpool weren't really in the game for 70 minutes, but then, you know, Liverpool do what they've been doing all season, really, which is been very, very clinical, and they found a way. But it's not like there were pushovers even then for the big sides, at least. They're definitely going through a tough moment, and they weren't good, but you can only beat what's in front of you, as you always say, Neil. But just before we get into the game, I just want to get your feeling on, it was refreshing to see Zinchenko come back, Jesus come back. We weren't really sure if they were going to play, and I think they brought a lot to our game, especially Zinchenko. I think he's pretty important for these games. These games where you know you're going up a team that's going to defend deep. I think Zinchenko's, we've certainly not moved beyond needing him to start games like that yet, at least, because I always think when we're looking to pick the lock, especially early on in those games, I always look to him personally. I'm always looking to see what sort of incisive pass he's playing and things like that. But I wonder what your thoughts were on the, I guess you could call it the drop in of Martinelli and the playing of Trossard. I know you love to see Trossard get more minutes, but he's not set the world alight from the left wing this season, Trossard. So I just wonder what your thoughts were on that and how, you know, you might see that in the future with both players playing well in this game.
Yeah, I think, firstly, just agree on Zinchenko. I think this was a kind of game which was made for him. But I'm not, I still wouldn't get carried away, because there are times when he plays games where the defending is so awful and it leaves us fallible at the back. And and it could lead to errors and potentially goals leaking. And that's when I think it's got to be, for him, it's got to be the right type of game, which is difficult to kind of quantify and, you know, qualify in what that game would look like. But this was perfect. This is a good example where he flourished. You know, there was that move right at the start where he's on the right. And I'm like, what's he doing on the right, in the middle and the right? And he kind of cuts in towards the left a little bit. But it's a tremendous pass to Trossard. It just split the defence beautifully. It just cut them apart. And Trossard should have done better, but actually that led to the corner, which led to the first goal. So, you know, in that way, it was a valuable contribution from Zinchenko, just getting the ball out there in a dangerous area. But he tended to be doing that quite a lot. And this is the Zinchenko we all love. Absolutely love him. He's so enterprising and so creative and a nightmare to deal with for the defenders. I mean, there's so many, two or three times where he just ran through them. And you've got to be a bit pragmatic, Jack, and think that Palace didn't play cute like the teams we faced in the last few games, where they've really kind of doubled and trebled up on the wingers. They've kind of nullified anything Odegaard was trying to do. and just stifled us and given us headaches, and we haven't seemed to find a way around it. And that's the why people have been saying that we need a striker, we need an out-and-out striker to give another another element up front, which then can be, you know, give maybe the time and space for the wingers to do a little bit more, because they're focused, the defenders also focusing on this out-and-out striker. So there's been all that talk, and we know, you know, that that's been going on. I think you and Adam did a pod and you were talking about things like this. So but I thought Zinchenko did brilliant. This is the game that you watch him and think, wow, what a signing. Like we did when he first started, if you remember, along with Jesus. As for Trossard, I am happy for him. I don't think he has done as well so far this season, but at the same time, I actually didn't mind his inclusion, because I think both the wingers have fallen off. I don't think, not because of anything they're doing wrong, I just think teams have figured out how to deal with them, and especially Saka just kicking off the park all the time. It's hard, isn't it, when you're like trying to do something and you've got not one defender, you've got two, sometimes even three. And Martinelli, although I think he's got a little bit more pace about him to get through that, his final ball has just been lacking. He either just then Flink plays it back straight to a defender, or the pass isn't good enough. And he just hasn't been himself, I think. And I think maybe for him to come on as a sub was a good, well, in hindsight, it ended up being brilliant, didn't it? Being a brilliant move. And Trossard, I think he started off, like that Zinchenko first in the beginning, I think he was a bit nervy. He wasn't quite himself, but then I think he grew into the game, Jack. And I'll tell you one thing though, when we talk about the goals from the corners, there's a lot of work that Trossard's doing. He's blocking, I don't know, I can't remember his name. Is it Anderson? I'm not sure.
Yeah, who is their best centre-back in terms of aerially.
Exactly. And Trossard is so cleverly positioned, he's allowing then Gabriel to have the space. It happened on three occasions, two of them that led to a goal that I can remember. It might even be more. But Trossard was very, very clever. So I think his inclusion in that sense paid dividends. But I think overall, let me just say before I finish, I don't want to get carried away with this. Now, this is unlike me, you know, 5-0, you know me, I'll be all over it. Yeah, we're back. Champions elect, we're back with it, we're going to smash everything apart now. For me, if you think about it, we've been lacking goals with our forward lineup, of course, right? And then, to be honest, up until Trossard's goal, it's like, okay, we're 2-0 up, but still none of our forwards have scored for God knows how long. And it was worrying me, Jack. I was thinking, you know, all right, we're playing okay. We're playing with the forward lineup. The movement is a lot better. As I think, again, Palace was kind of allowing that a little bit, but not to discredit us. We played some great football, great movement, lovely to watch. But I felt that our forwards are still not firing. Until Trossard scored that goal, I don't think a forward had scored for a while, Jack. Or hadn't, you know, it just feels like we haven't scored for ages. We haven't scored some goals from a forward. And I thought, is this another case of paper in the cracks, in the sense that this window, potentially, we would have liked to have seen maybe us sign someone up front. And now that we've won 5-0, is it kind of saying to Arteta, well, we don't need anyone, scored five goals. And that was my worry. Coming away from this game, I thought, is it almost like saying, no, we don't need to sign anyone now? And I don't know how you feel, but that's how I took away from it.
I don't think it's going to make a difference, because the window just seems so ridiculously quiet on our front. But I think it highlighted exactly what we do need, which is, I would love to have a Martinelli-type player coming off the bench. Well, imagine those right-backs and full-backs going, oh, no, we're already 2-0 down here, 3-0 down here, and now we've got this guy coming off pure pace, running at us constantly, never giving us a break, you know, really fast, really driven with the ball, dribbling left, right, either side, can go either way. But the problem is, Martinelli, we all know, is going to start in the big games when he's fit. So we don't have that option from the bench. And whilst I think Trossard can be effective, he's just a completely different type of player. And I'm not certain his long-term future with Arsenal is from the left anyway. I feel like he's much more better sort of in that false nine role, whether he'll get much minutes there, I'm not sure. But if he does play from the left, he plays it a very different way. And it just, to me, it highlighted, imagine having Martinelli, but then having another player with similar attributes, and we just don't have it. Doesn't trust Nelson on the other side, and Trossard is a completely different type of player. So for me, it despite the first five goals and, you know, all, you know, three or four from, you know, players that you want them to be from, I felt it highlighted what we lack, really. And I don't think Arteta, you know what, with Wenger, it used to be like, oh, that game's going to stop him from signing someone, and it would. We'd play a game and he'd find a gem, and it would stop us from signing someone for a whole window. With Arteta, I think he's more ruthless than that. But I do get the feeling this FFP stuff has probably held a lot of teams back, because there is not a lot of movement in the league. There's a lot of loan stuff going on, and I think that's probably the best we can hope for. But we'll get to that maybe at the end of the pod. We'll just discuss what you think we really need, and do we have enough to truly challenge, you know, this season? Because I think that, you know, that's a pretty interesting question to ask. But you mentioned the set pieces. Yeah, I thought that Trossard stuff was brilliant. I mean, the attention to detail on set pieces is quite incredible. I mean, did you see the stuff about Odegaard's pulling his socks up as well? I mean, that's incredible as well. And he obviously doesn't, I don't think he does that every game, which means we're evolving it. We're looking at it and we're going, people are going to watch us. We need to do something different. Like the way we put Declan Rice on this first set piece, because, it, you know, let's be honest, Trossard's set pieces from the left have been dreadful for a while, and Declan Rice, you know, knows how to deliver a ball. I found it interesting that we took him out of the box. I wonder what that means for his, you know, what we feel, is he one of our biggest dangers aerially or whatnot? But ultimately it worked a treat, because it emphasized, I mean, Gabriel is our biggest threat from set pieces, I think, and that's the guy you should be aiming for almost all the time. And it was a fantastic delivery. There was a little argument, Neil, on that, you know, of a foul, but I find it very hard to really look at that and think, because I think he's not used the player to jump. I saw him as almost putting his arms on the shoulders as he's coming down from the jump. And to me, that's not a foul. I know I'm looking at it from an Arsenal perspective, but I think even on the other side, I would not be looking for a foul. I know Roy Hodgson mentioned it, and I'm like, I do not see that. Some people like Neville try to compare it to the Jollington one, and that's ludicrous. I think he's just baiting there, to be honest, which is what he's become, really, Gary Neville. So, Gabriel, I think, just discuss, what are your thoughts on, we were moaned a few weeks ago about us from set pieces defensively, right? We'd conceded it from a set piece against West Ham, conceded from another one, I think, against Fulham, whereas we've been very, very solid from set pieces. But now, I mean, in an attacking sense, I think we've scored 13 set piece goals this season. We're the top in the league for set piece goals. It's 31% of our goals. Obviously, we want more open play goals. But I mean, we were miles away a few years back from being, you know, the most dangerous team from set pieces. And another thing that I read was Crystal Palace, before this game, were one of the best defensive teams from set pieces. They'd only conceded 3 all season. So we really, you know, found a way to make them look vulnerable from them, didn't we? And Gabriel, I mean, he's fantastic. It's a great header, I thought.
Brilliant. You can see right from the, just before the corner was being taken, Odegaard doing his thing, and you could just see him, out of all the players in the box, he was the one that was the most dynamic. He was already jumping up and down. I think it was Richardson who was marking him. Can't remember.
I think it's Richards. He used to play for Bayern Munich.
Richards, that's it. And he had his number every single time. He just literally left him for dead. And I thought his dynamism in the box was amazing. And I think that's what they've worked on when they've gone away. And that's what they've worked on. They've worked on improving or getting that set piece thing. Because I think we lacked it a little bit in the last few games, didn't we? We had even lost that part of our skill set. Whereas, yeah, now, as you said, we've got it back. I think we're too clear at the top. I think we're 13. I think next team's 11. I can't remember who that might be.
I think it's Everton, Sorry,
yes, Karim. Yes, that's it, Everton. So, you know, I just thought Gabriel was so dynamic and he was just so aggressive. That's what I've seen in him in this box play. Very, very aggressive, very strong, and almost like very hungry to meet the ball first before anyone else. And, you know, even that one that was sandwiched in between the two goals, where it kind of ricochets off their players and it almost hits, I think, well, it does hit the bar. I can't remember.
The second goal, the second set piece.
No, not the second set piece, it might be. Yeah. he was still involved in that as well. It was the same like kind of protagonists, you know. Trossard was doing what he was doing. And I think you're right. I think the fact that Rice had delivered the first one, Saka did this one that led to the own goal, didn't it?
Which was skeptical. I was a little skeptical.
So as well.
We should have been given that, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as I said during the game, I wasn't quite with it. But in the when I was watching the highlights, I kept rewinding it and looking and thinking, how has that not been given as Gabriel's goal? I that was my personal take on it. I don't know. I don't know how it's not going in.
I mean,
yeah.
You'd have to really look at that and give him, you know, look at it pessimistically from an attacking point of view and be like, it's not going wide. There's no way to prove that's going wide. And you never look at it that closely with goals. If it looks like it's going on target vaguely, you give it to the goal scorer. It's very, I find it very odd. I don't really remember it. I mean, I remember goals like Payne's not coming off his head and he demanding that it was given to him and it got given to him, you know, and it didn't even touch him and things like that. And I found it very odd. I was like, he clearly got a header on it. The goalkeeper's on the line when he heads it across goal. It's really unlikely that's going beyond the post on the other side.
No, it wasn't, Jack.
There was a lot of confusion over here about if it was given as an own goal or not. And I think there was a lot of people just looking at it being like, I can't see how it would be given as an own goal, but it was. I find it very odd. I'd almost like an explanation for that, but they only give explanations for stuff against Arsenal, not stuff
for Arsenal.
So that's the kind of thing. Great point. I mean, Saka's set pieces are quite reliable, aren't they, from the right? I mean, he's pretty good from the right, but we don't really have a right footer from the left that can be, so maybe it is Rice. I think he can be quite a danger in the box, and do we need him if a team breaks on us? That would be the question mark I have. Against the bigger team, would we do that? Would we put Rice out there? But again, it looks like this set piece coach Jova kind of evolves it game by game, so I presume next game we wouldn't see the same thing, for example, but it's very interesting. I find it very interesting because I don't ever remember. I mean, Wenger, I don't think he ever trained on set pieces. Did he ever care? I take them short and try to keep the ball again. You know, I mean, he didn't. That wasn't something it looked like we particularly worked on. And if we were affected from them, it's because Vieira, Campbell, Torre are all 6 foot plus and they can bullet headers in. But you know, Arteta clearly just is trying to get every single percentage out of it. But do you think it's settled us, Neil, because I know it's set piece goals and you know there's a bit of a sort of rolling joke with us not being able to get as many open play goals, but it was quite settling from a fan's perspective to see us get those early goals, wasn't it? And I think you saw, certainly in the second half at least, but you saw how it relaxed the team in terms of being in front of goal, the attackers perhaps as well. It was exactly what the team needed, wasn't it? If you were thinking about the Dubai trip and how can we react properly, it was pretty much what the doctor ordered, really, wasn't it?
Oh, 100%. I think it was even noticeable with the fans. It was just a relief. It was a sigh of relief that the fact that we have been really struggling of late. You know, I think there was a lot of fans going into this game with a lot of trepidation, thinking, you know, are we going to get the points? And to be fair, Jack, Palace have been difficult in the last few meetings. I think Hodgson's won his last three against us at the Emirates. There is some stuff. Maybe I've got it wrong. Or the last three against him. But he, you know, they're not easy. They can be tough. They can be a tough team to play against. And I was like skeptical. I'm always so positive. And I was like, I don't know, you know, we've got to really do something differently to change what's been happening of late. So I think you're right. I think with the set pieces working, and also you're saying it kind of probably relaxed the team, which it did, but there's probably also an inner feeling of, yes, that hard work in away when we were training away has paid off. And there's always something quite nice from that, isn't it? It's like you with your doing studies and stuff and, you know, you get the reward at the end. And I think that's probably was nice to see actually tangible, manifest tangibly. And you're like, right, we've done all that work with the set piece coach and look, we're 2-0 up from it. So I think all of that has contributed into the team relaxing. And then they start getting into the rhythm of the style of football we've been playing, you know, over the last, I'd say, what, season and a half now. And, you know, Zinchenko doing what he was doing. He was massive. You know, I think I've discounted him a little bit. of late. I think I've been so kind of biased, the fact that he can't defend, and maybe I've been getting a bit angry with him, but you know, this was so good to see from him. But I think all our forwards were playing a lot better. Jack, the movement is so much better. Yes, again, I did say, throwing that caveat, that Palace probably weren't as good as or as cute as the teams we've met recently in terms of defending. But, you know, end of the day, we are going to get teams like that playing against us. It's going to happen. They're not all going to just set up to you know, to kick Martinelli and Saka off the park. But I felt that it's given us a huge lift and a huge boost. And boy, do we need it, because I think, I know we've got Liverpool coming up, but I actually feel the Forest game is going to be really tough because of this. They seem to be our bogey team. That's a tough game to go to. Jack, I'm sorry, we need to win. A draw isn't good enough. We're 5 points behind Liverpool. We need to win that game.
So yeah, it's a tough ground to go to, and we don't notoriously do very well there, do we? Obviously, we lost in the cup there. We lost there last season towards, I think it was towards the end of the season. When sort of things were over, but we lost there, so we've not had a good time recently there. So yeah, you're right. It's a massive game, and you know what was nice is after that we certainly relaxed more. We probably could have got one or two more in the first half. That yeah, there was a ball through to Trossard that went over the bar. I think it got deflected, but we didn't get a corner for it. And then really in the second half, Neil, we started to open up again. And your man, David Raya, what's your thoughts on him? Because Mikel Arteta, I tell you that, mate, that was the most animated I saw him all game. And he was clearly, I mean, it's clear for Mikel Arteta, you can see he's very supportive of this new goalkeeper. But in fairness to Raya, through no fault of his own, I am kind of looking forward to the lack of scrutiny over every move a goalkeeper makes. Do you know what I mean? I think because there's two of them now that you know are quite close, we analyse everything. So I've got people, you discussing with me, you know, every little thing. So he had the poor pass in the first half, which was a poor pass out, but something that you oftentimes would probably overlook. You know, he makes a good save from it and you'd forget about it, but you know, you'll fixate on that, or people will fixate on that now because, you know, you've got Rams down behind and it's a constant comparison. I don't think it does either of them any favours, but you definitely did see in this game, certainly in the second half at least, the ability he has to distribute, because it wasn't just the throw for the third goal. He had a couple of really good kickouts, one to Havertz, I think maybe one to Jesus as well. And he's really accurate with those long balls, isn't he? I mean, he's really, really pinpoint accurate. And I think when I saw that third goal, Neil, I think we need to be better in transition. This was a beautiful goal. I think it was 10 seconds from his hands to Trossard's finish, wasn't it? And but do you ever watch us and think, we've got Saka on one side, Martinelli on the other side, we've got the best distributor in goal now, and we don't score enough goals like that. I don't think we score enough. Do you remember Wenger's teams that we would go, you know, a corner for them or a free kick for them would be, the fans would stand up because we'd be like, if we get this ball, we're away. And it would be that, you'd be that confident of a counter-attack. And I think we've got the players to do it. And I really do. And now you can ping it to Havertz, who's very good at that, you know, being a pinpoint target man, a focal point. So I thought it was a goal that we don't see often enough, but it was a beautiful goal, Neil.
Sorry, trying to get myself on mute. No, Jack, you've just summed it up. I completely agree with you. I think in Wenger's day, it was almost expected because we were so used to seeing it over and over again. I mean, I think Alan Hansen was the one that actually sat there and analysed. I think it was halfway through the season, and he was timing loads of those goals. And they were all averaged between 10 to 12 seconds, Jack. That's how fast we were. He said, I think he picked out a handful, maybe half a dozen. And he said, look, let's take the average. And he was going through each one. I think it was Matt, I can't remember. And it was, he's the one that cited. He says, I've never seen a greater Premiership football team. Never in my life. He goes, it's incredible. I still think with that team is better than what City have done. I still believe it. But anyway, that's me being biased. But I think you're absolutely right. I think we've got the tools to do that. And the fact that we saw that goal, I'm hoping that's the template going forward. Excuse the pun, but I think I really hope it is. And look, David Raya, I've been blinkered because I really liked Ramsdale, still do. And I can't help that. That's just my personal feeling. I know there's a lot of people saying that he's careless, he's a bit aloof, and he's not fully, you know, he's not fully focused in games and all of that. And I get it. But putting that aside, I think I still feel that when he came on, because we didn't, maybe for me, the disappointment of not getting Martinez. Remember, I was, if you could look back on the pods, I was screaming to sign him and or to keep him. With hindsight, I'm glad we didn't because of the absolute arse of the person he is. But as a goalkeeper, I was like, my God, how can we not keep this player? So I think when he came along, Ramsdale, and started doing what he was doing, I kind of just had that, you know, kind of connection with him as a fan. And, you know, not I, you know, we all kind of look at players and we're like wowed and stuff. It wasn't quite to that level, but there was that real connection. And, but to be honest, I think I said, was it my last pod or the pod before that I was on, that I'm starting to warm to Raya? I'm sure I said it to you. And certainly you're right. This game, even the mistake he made, oh, and by the way, that mistake, what a great piece of skill for Saliba. That's some Saliba up, by the way.
Yeah.
Under pressure. Oh, my God. Jack, I can't think of a better defender. I really can't. It's just so beautiful. I would pay money just to watch him on his own do stuff like that. He's so brilliant with it. I've never seen someone so calm. And I keep saying it. I sound like a broken record, but he's just golden. We talk about Rice and his importance, but Saliba, my God, I hope he stays for a long time because he's absolute. Gabriel is fantastic doing what he does, but Saliba in those positions, I don't think there's a better player. I don't personally.
The frustration, though, is I don't think we're delusional. We know where our weaknesses are, but
yeah.
I think we've got the best centre-back partnership. I really do. And
oh, yeah.
When I look at you can't really shout it from the rooftops because when you look at the stats, you know, Liverpool have the best defensive record. They've conceded the least goals. But when you watch the games, truly, we limit the other team to so little. I mean, they had 0.35 XG. In this game, and everyone's. I remember halfway through the game, a few people going, they've had more shots to target than us. And I decided to wait until the end of the game when we'd won 5-0 to respond to that. But I went, they had all of their shots were from the 20 to 25 yards out. So what that's saying is we're really not letting anyone near our third. Now, I know it's Crystal Palace, of course, but we've seen this in when we're on it in games against Man City at home. You know, I mean, we genuinely have a Liverpool away. Other than, you know, that big Trent chance, which, by the way, was caused by two players running into each other and falling over.
Odegaard and Zinchenko.
Right. Yeah. I know it was bad. It was a huge chance, but that was, you know, half of their creation on the night. And I just think, you know, we do. I think it is the, whether we get anywhere or not, but I do genuinely think it is the best centre-back partnership in the league. I really do think that. And I think it's a shame to them, really, when you look at the stats that, in terms of the goals conceded, at least, they don't really fully back that up. They show that we're good, but they don't show us really how much we limit the other team.
I agree.
Very often, you know, the Fulham game was an out at the moment and a relative outlier to that. But even then, they actually didn't create very much. We were just terrible going forward. But I agree with you, Neil. I mean, they're absolutely fantastic as a partner. But obviously, Saliba's going to be he's so silky, isn't he? You know, on the ball, he's terrific. He's more eye catching than Gabriel. But Gabriel is that sort of aggressor, the one that's so switched on in both boxes. And they balance each other.
Correct. Yeah, they're the perfect foil for each other. They remind me, I know it's a different setup, but they really remind me of Vieira Petit when they first started. I think when they would cover for each other, they'd clear up each other's. If they made a mistake, the other one would be there. I think they just work so well together, and we have to keep them fit till the very last whistle of the last game. It's crucial. I think you're absolutely right. We've got one who's a bit mad, maniacal in Gabriel. He's more aggressive. I think he's more emotional. He wears his heart on his sleeve a little bit more. You can see when he celebrates everything. I mean, not to say Saliba doesn't, but I can see more emotion from Gabriel. Then you've got Mr. Cool. You know, he's got the sun shades on and he's just like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, and he's even got the deep voice to go with it. You know, he's just mystical, isn't he? And you mentioned the City. Isn't that this game where Haaland had, what, 13 passes in the whole game? Or 13 touches, sorry. Yeah. You know, so it's not that people can't say, well, it's only Palace, because we've proven it at the top level as well. So, yeah. And that's with all due respect to Palace as well. And you they have. But anyway, sorry, I digress. I apologise. So Raya, you know, he's made that error. He made a tremendous save. And then after that, I thought I was the same. I thought his distribution is back to what we all expected it to be. Because I remember when we got him on loan, there was that video of him in training and he was doing those crazy distribution exercise with the coach.
Yeah, pinging the ball, yeah.
And I tweeted that. I was going, look at this. Oh, my goodness me. I was like, just full of admiration. And I thought, I don't think I've seen as much. Maybe I've been blinkered with it, but I really noticed it against Palace. I thought, wow. And the goal, Jack, I mean, the pass out. And you're right, it wasn't just that. There was two or three other instances where he's thrown it or he's kicked it to feet, literally. And you're right, Havertz is the perfect player for that. Everyone's talking about Havertz and what his role is and da-da-da-da. But I think in those situations, Havertz is the one, the man to really, the target man, essentially. Yeah. He's the target man for Raya. And it was such a beautiful throw. But, you know, credit to Jesus. You know, there's, again, talk about him. What is he doing enough? And is he doing what he was? But if Trossard had finished that other shot better, that would have been another Jesus assist. So I think it was Jesus that assisted.
Was that the one in the second half or the first half?
When he kind of hit it.
Oh, the ballooned it. Because he had another one in the second half that I want to say.
Oh, it might have been true.
No. The one in the second half was one where he just miscontrolled it in front of me. He never got the shot off.
It was actually a
huge chance just before the goal. And I remember being quite frustrated with Trossard. In that game, it was definitely before his goal. But he takes it really well. Yeah. He cuts inside, and I think Trossard's one of our best finishers, to be honest.
He left the defender on his arse, didn't he? It was great, great to see. That's always the best, isn't it? When you pole axe the defender, they're left on their backside with a big red face. It was hilarious, but yeah, it was a great assist and an amazing finish. And then I think that was it. Then everything else after that is academic, but so important to get the open play goal. Massive,
yeah.
Jack.
Yeah, and it opened things up, and I think that probably relaxed the crowd even more. And then, Neil, obviously the game was over at that point, 3-0. I think even Mikel Arteta, in his sort of, you know, sort of slightly worrying ways, was able to sort of make subs maybe he wouldn't have. And we got to see Smith Rowe and Martinelli come on, and Smith Rowe got a good sort of 25, 30 minutes, which is much longer than he's been given in the Premier League for some time. Oh, I just want to know your thoughts, because Havertz, again, you know, plays in the eight. And for me, I'm not certain if Declan Rice and Havertz has really worked this season. I don't think it has fully. I think Declan Rice, the beauty of Declan Rice is he can play at the six and the eight. But the more I watch how our squad looks and the players that he trusts, I tend to think Declan Rice is probably currently more effective as an eight for us than a six. Like, I didn't think Declan Rice was poor in this game. He did everything he needed to do out of second gear, really. But in the big games, if you look in some of the big games we've done really well in, like Man City at home, for example, he actually has played in the eight, and Jorginho's played behind. And obviously, if Partey was fit, that would be Partey behind him, in my head. That's what I'm thinking. But I think the problem we've got is the weakness of Declan Rice is probably his ability to play those quick passes forward, like Partey did. He'd take one touch Partey and he'd play it straight forward, and that's how we'd split defences, right? Declan Rice is a bit more laboured, a bit more assured with his passing. He doesn't give the ball away as often as Partey, but he doesn't make incisive passes as much. But the problem with that is neither does Havertz. Havertz is very safe with the ball. He plays it backwards and sideways much more than he plays it forwards. I often watch Havertz and think he's always in the eight position. His body position's never really in the right way. He's never turned in the right direction. His passes are always under hit. He moves a little bit slowly. Whereas Xhaka was really able. Xhaka was able to play those balls, right? He was very good at playing those balls. He knew exactly where to play them, got his body in the right position. So I just think combined, they lack progressive passing. And I think that hurts us in an attacking sense. So for me, I keep going on about it, but I just think that, I mean, I'd be really, really interested to see what happens when Partey comes back. But I think Jorginho needs to play more. And I think Smith Rowe ideally probably needs to play more, but if not, we should be pushing Declan Rice into those positions. But I just, what are your thoughts on Havertz, and then maybe touch on Smith Rowe, you know, Havertz in the eight? I think we keep going back to it, but I think, you know, pushing him maybe up to the focal point when Jesus comes off is actually a better scenario for him. I don't think it's taken off yet at the eight, and I think it's costing us in the short term, certainly in our way of progressing the ball.
I think it's the reason why, well, one of the reasons, I don't want to put the whole blame on Kyle. Of course, it's not his fault. It's the setup. I think that doesn't work. It's the reason why we're not as dynamic. Yes, of course, we are more focused on defence this season than we were last season. And with that, it comes at a price because we're more controlled and more dominant defensively. So I'm not saying that it's just because of Kai that and everything's been unbalanced and whatever. But I agree with you. I think you've summed it up. I don't really need to repeat it. I think exactly what you said, I agree with. I think it slows it down a lot. Kai's not the fast player. We had great evidence of that in the game against Liverpool, where he had a chance and he was, what are you doing? He's like, took a million years just to try and get himself into position. Whereas, you know, someone up front with a little bit of, you know, bang, couple of touches, at least get a shot out. And I think it is the slowness. And to be honest, I've never actually viewed Declan Rice like that, how you just described it. And I think you're right. So I think he's like we were describing earlier, how Saliba and Gabriel are the perfect four for each other. I think a party, fully fit party on Song and Rice would probably be arguably maybe one of the best midfielders in the league, just the way I think the Saliba-Gabriel partnership is, because the contrast in each player complements each other so well and works for what Arteta is trying to do, in my opinion. So I think, I'm hoping Partey comes back fully fit and he stays with us. At least I can't see a long-term future for him now. No. It looks like he'll be on his way in the summer. Yeah. But at least for this title push or run, whatever, however it's going to end for us, I'd like to see at least a few more games, maybe 10 games, 12 games, of a fully fit party, a fully fit Declan Rice, both at the top of their game. And I just want to see what that adds, what dimension that adds to our overall play, because I think that'll be amazing. And I think with Havertz, you're right. I think we had a quick exchange on WhatsApp. I think his best position is the nine. But how many chances he's going to get of that, I don't know. Because obviously you've got Jesus there. And, you know, I think for me, you know, I'm biased. And I saw Smith Rowe come on, I was ecstatic. I thought, finally, he's getting more than 3 minutes. And he was dynamic, Jack. He progressed the ball. I remember three runs. I was actually sitting on that side of the pitch where I could see him just bolting down. And he's progressive, he's dynamic, he's forward thinking. And I think he's just hungry. And I can't wait for him to score a goal. I just want to see him bag a goal, because I think that will really do him, his confidence good. I think that's the pressure he's been put under all the time. He's been brought on with these small cameo, you know, chances, and the fans are expecting something from him because he was carrying the ball so well and doing so well with that period with Saka when they were literally holding the team together. And that, what was it, two seasons ago? I don't know how many months ago it was. And I think there's an expectation from the fans, but I think he's also got an expectation on himself. And the fact, if he's given more minutes, I think then that will come to fruition. And once he's got that goal, I think we're going to see a great player. But it depends on if Arteta gives him time. I want to see it, Jack. I want to see him in that position. I really like him. And even if it's the cost of players like Trossard, I'd rather than see Trossard come on as a sub. I'd like to see Emma Smith-Rowe start. And I don't know what then the situation with Havertz. I'm still thinking the 65 million price tag is a factor. And it's almost like it's Arteta signing, isn't it? And he's got to prove himself. I wonder if there's a bit of ego with that. So I don't know how it's going to pan out going forward. But for me, fully fit prime Partey, more minutes for Smith Rowe, and I'll be a lot happier.
Yeah, it's just going back on the Rice thing. When we looked at it, I know I think he's been brilliant. It's not a criticism of Rice as such. It is obvious though what his strengths are. And his strengths, when you look at his data from West Ham and from us, is his strengths are winning ground duels, intercepting the ball, turnovers, right? So, you know, you're winning the ball and ability to cover ground and run into space with and without the ball. He's one of the best off the ball midfielders. I think he's the best off the ball midfielder I've seen in the league, to be honest. But and he always says my best position to West Ham was the six, but West Ham sat deep. So they were winning the ball in their own half, but we want to win the ball higher up. So play him higher up, play him higher up. And he'll do all of those things 10, 15 yards higher up, will transition quicker. I mean, to me, when I watch him, and if we need him to get him back in position, there's no one better than getting back in position than Declan Rice, because he's got the best engine, you know, in the game. So I'm like, I think we're currently set up, if he can overlook and take his time on what he's trying to do with Havertz and maybe do what we say and push him to the false nine and rotational option, can he put Rice a little bit more often in the eight? And I hope we see that when Partey comes back. I'm not convinced, because obviously when Partey was playing before the injury, we're actually seeing Partey as an inverted right back. So it's like, you know, we could easily see that again. I don't necessarily think we will, but we definitely could. I wouldn't be surprised. I've got a theory on Smith Rowe, to be honest, Neil, and this is why I think we will sell him in the summer. And I like him. I like him. I think Smith Rowe is a good player, and he's a one player out of Nelson, Eddie, Smith Rowe. I'm very reluctant to go sell him. And I think the club is on a certain, because he's so supportive of Smith Rowe whenever he gets asked about him. But the only sort of thing I look at Smith Rowe from the eight and Havertz from the eight is I think he doesn't trust him defensively off the ball. And I think that's the one thing he does trust Havertz with, which is why he plays him there. He trusts Havertz to get back in position, to win his duels and all this kind of stuff, and to cover the ground and things like that. And I think if you look at Arteta, almost in every position bar left back, surprisingly, he looks at the player and asks himself whether they can do the defensive part of the game that he wants them to do first, and then decides whether they're going to start or not. So if you remember when Smith Rowe was scoring all the time, but he wasn't starting, because Martinelli was doing way more defensively on the left side. So he started Martinelli. And we were all like, remember, we were having debates on podcasts every week. Who'd you pick this week, Smith Rowe or Martinelli? And we would all debate and we'd have different opinions on it. And he kept picking Martinelli because he trusted him. Why did he start Saka over Pepe on the right wing 3-4 years ago? Because he trusted him defensively, right? Why did he start? Why did he buy Jesus, who Pep Guardiola said was the best defensive striker in the world? Do you know, he literally looks at every player, I think, and wants to see, check out whether they can do what that he wants defensively first, even in attacking positions. And I think, I worry that Smith Rowe and probably Fabio Vieira to a certain degree won't make it into this Arsenal first team because they can't, or he can't trust them from a defensive position. Personally, with Smith Rowe, I'd use him as the, like you said, as the, where Trossard's been, as the rotational left wing option, like he was being used 2-3 years ago, because I think he's got more pace and more dynamism and more ability to run at the defence than Trossard has, and move Trossard, you know, internally when we need to and stuff like that. But yeah, it's odd. I don't want anyone to get injured, but in certain areas, I always think we always get the injuries to the players we don't want. We never get the injuries to the players that go, wow, that's opened up a space. We never do, do we? We never do. Eddie's always fit. He's always flipping fit. I mean, God bless him, of course. But yeah, no, it was a great goal. We ran off track, but I don't think that's interesting discussion on the sort of midfield dynamic, because that's definitely the area that's changed. And it's the area that you'd have to look at and think, well, why aren't our front three working? Yeah, that were amazing last season. They're not quite hitting the heights. You have to probably look at the midfield and say something's it's completely been overhauled, isn't it? So, but obviously Smith Rowe, I think you're right. Smith Rowe came on, he looked dynamic, he looked fresh, he looked fit. And I'd like to see him get more minutes. I want to see him get more trusting minutes than 3-0 up minutes. That's what I would like to see him get. We don't give enough of those to him, I don't think. When we're down a goal, get him on. He is defensively maybe more liable, but you're down a goal, so you need him. You get him on the bench. That would be, and he used to be the first attacking sub off the bench, you know, when he was fit. And he needs to try to work his way to get into that point again. Be the Trossard, be the guy that's first off the bench. But Neil, how important do you think the two goals and you can touch him if you want, could be for Martinelli. He's only scored two this season before that. He's, you know, if we're going to do anything good this season, Martinelli is going to have to hit the heights of what he did last season. And I think if you said before this game, oh, who could you do with getting a, it would have been Martinelli. You know, we all want him. We know how good he can be when he's firing and confident. So it was really nice to see, wasn't it? And two very similar goals. Well, I think Palace had kind of started looking at their own fan base, making protests, but it didn't matter to us because they were two fantastically worked goals.
I'm so glad you asked that. It's massively important for him. Huge. You could see it in his, when he scored the second, you could see it just on his face. You could just see what it meant to him. He's so happy. I think, firstly, the goals. I think the first one was the Nketiah assist, wasn't it? Great assist by him, by the way. It's a lovely through ball.
Oh, you're watching Crystal Palace, is what I would be saying.
Yeah, brilliant. I love that. That's a good joke. I like it. Yeah, it's a good one. I hope they're bloody watching this. And then Martinelli, it reminded me so. I mean, I know everyone's already said it, but I thought that's Henri at his heyday. That just that lovely little dink with his right foot into the corner, and then to do it again within what, not even 60 seconds. And again, Jorginho, what you were saying about Jorginho earlier, I thought that was a great assist from him. You know, he gathered the ball and he saw it, his vision, bang, straight up to Martinelli for him to run through, clearly onside, both goals as well, perfect timing. So desperately needed by him. And I think you're right. I think the reason why we were almost there last season was because of his contribution with goals, was because of contributions from him, Xhaka, Saka, Odegaard. They all contributed, didn't they? We got 88 goals, but it came from a plethora of outlets. And if we are going to push or at least be close, you're right, we need Martinelli. We don't have anyone else. And the other thing you mentioned earlier, you very, very briefly touched on, I don't think anything's going to happen in the window. So we're not going to look, maybe alone, like you said. But if that's the case, then Martinelli's got to be the one. You've got to look at him. At the moment, Saka's dried up a little bit. It's a shame Gabriel's goal wasn't given because that nullifies Saka's assist, doesn't it, I think? Because he's the one that delivered it in. So we've always said that even if Saka's not been playing well, he's getting the numbers. But that he lost out on that one.
Yeah, Gabriel gets the assist, which is strange, but...
I'm so happy for him, so needed, and definitely now when we got the next few games that we're coming up with, going to be difficult. And you know what, the other thing I never even thought of is we're still in the Champions League, right? And I think we've got a fairly good tie to progress. And again, I'm not getting ahead of myself, but it could have been a lot worse. So the focus also is going to be on that very, very soon. Is it February the time? So it's not far away. It's 2-3 weeks? Not far away, Jack. So we have to make sure, leading up to that, we've got to do everything we can to get as many points as we can, namely the Forest game and Liverpool game, the next two on the cards. And if we're going to do that, this is probably the best build-up for it. So yes, like you said, Palace would probably be more interested in the protest, probably wanted to go home. Had enough, 3-0 down, it was all over. But that still doesn't mean that Arsenal have got to still, they're not gifted a goal. They're not gifted it. They still have to work it. And the way he took both those goals was magnificent. And I think hugely important to build up for these two games. So I think it could be a good omen for us. Hope it is. And maybe this half of the season will be the opposite of last. Where last season we fell away in the second half of the season. Maybe we haven't done as well in the first half this season, but we'll get better and strong in the second. But time will tell. I'm thinking about Timber as well. I mean, I know I don't want anyone to feel that we need to rush him back. But if he comes into the mix as well, and if we're still in it when he comes back in, Jack, and he plays as well as we saw and what his potential was, that could help a lot. Help a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
So let's see what
Yeah, it's interesting because most of the reliable And I agree with you on Martinelli. I think his first goal reminded me of Henry. Actually, reminded me of Martinelli's goal away at Leicester last season, where he scored it and then pulled his hamstring in the same process. I think Trossard passed it to him, he scored it, and that was the one downer from the game. I think it was Leicester away, and it was exactly the same. It was like this slow moving, perfectly placed ball into the outside. But yeah, I was so happy for him, because we all love Martinelli, don't we? He's so dynamic, he's fantastic to watch. But he clearly, you know, was in a bit of a rut in terms of being in front of goal, and so it was great to see the first one, and then, you know, the second one probably, you know, bound by the confidence, he was just able to place it with a lot more power on the second one. But hopefully it's a sign, and now he's got a bit of a dilemma against Forest. You know, who does he start? Does he want Martinelli from the bench? Does he start Trossard? And that's exactly what you want. You want players doing that and creating those headaches for the manager, which are good headaches, I think so. But yeah, it's weird because most of the journalists will say that what we're looking for in the market is a loan, and a loan of a fullback. And I have to say, I absolutely love Arteta, and I love his sort of talent identification, and I love how he works in the market. But I don't think, even if we've got minimal amount of funds to do a loan, I don't think we should be spending it or allowing him to spend it on a defender, because I think we've got quite a lot. We're thin at the moment, but Tomiyasu, by the way, we're all Indonesia fans. That starts in 3 hours. And, you know, we are. We love you, Tomiyasu, but come on, Indonesia. Okay, because we want you back, mate. And to be honest, you owe us one, because you're always injured. And then you go off to Japan and play for a month. You know, you owe us, just like Pahati did, really. He owed us staying for this one. He probably went, I can't go again to international. I haven't played for him since I played for you last, Ghana. You know, and they're out now. But yeah, we're all. But Tomiyasu's to come back in a few weeks. We have Kivior still there. Zinchenko just came back. Touch wood, he's okay. If we're looking to loan a fullback, I have to look at him and think maybe he's worried about the fitness of someone like Ben White and his ability to play twice a week and things like that. There's obviously been rumours about him carrying an injury and things like that. But I think, you know, in terms of that coverage, and you compare it to who comes in if Saka goes down, well, he trusts Reece Nelson a hell of a lot less than he trusts Tomiyasu. And, you know, so for me, I'd personally be looking at it and going, if we can loan anybody, you've got to be looking at the winger market. Is there someone you can get in that is more dynamic and scarier to opposition than Reece Nelson and Eddie Nketiah? You know, because for me, when I look at our team now, we obviously have to directly compare us to the teams we want to beat. Eddie Nketiah and Reece Nelson don't make Liverpool Man City squads. They don't make. I watched Liverpool the other day. They've got Salah out, and they've got Jota and 40 million Jota and 50 million Gakpo. And they can moan all they like about not spending Liverpool, but check how much they've spent on their front six and compare it to us. It's night and day. And goals win you games. So at some point, you're going to have to spend that money on your attack. You can't keep spending. You know, we've spent around 150 to 200 million on fullbacks under Mikel Arteta. You know, Ben White is now a fullback, 50 million. Tomiyasu, 20 million. Kirio is not a fullback, but he plays as one, 20 million. Zinchenko, 30 million. Timber, 40 million. Wingers, Trossard, 20 million. He's not spent any other money. He's not spent. Okay, you were blessed to have Martinelli and Saka for a combined fee of 6 million, but they're still young. They're 22. We're competing against the Mo Salahs of the world and you know, the Haalands. You know, I know Haaland's young, but he's in a top level, elite talent. And, you know, we need something else. I think we're short. If you're telling me, Neil, we stick in with this squad for the rest of the season, I think we fall short. I do. I think we fall short. Well, what do you think? Do you think we fall short? Do you think without any sort of additional signings, we'll just end up falling short again? Because I just look at them and we don't have the cheat codes that Liverpool and City have. We don't have the Alissons or the Salahs or the Haalands or the De Bruyners. We don't. We're close, but we don't quite have that. Or probably our cheat codes are Saliba and Rice, but they're not at either end of the pitch. So, do you know what I mean? They not quite anyway. It's not quite there.
I think when you think about the way I look at it is game changers. That's how I look at it. And sometimes I look at our bench, things are not going well, and I think, well, who's going to come on and be that game changer? And I'm afraid to say I don't see it. As optimistic as I am, as you know, as everyone who knows me knows, I don't see that game changer. And that's, for me, that's the damning factor. Whereas if you look at the teams you've just talked about, you've got game changers to come on off the bench and potentially win you games. We used to have game changers in Wenger's golden period where, you know, you could just rely on that one person. Even if they weren't playing well, they would have a moment of 2 minutes and change a game and get you the points. And I think that's the biggest problem for me. And yeah, I with sadness agree. I think, by the way, how you just described the way we've spent money and how we've just worked the funds towards mainly more the defensive side, I think you're spot on. I think that was a really good point that you made. Yeah, it's crazy when you think about Saka and Martinelli, is it? 6 million for two, potentially, I think, arguably at one point, with the best or the most lethal wingers in the league. 6 million, Jack. Yeah. So we need to, yeah, you're right. I think we need to spend forward. We need to invest heavily up front now, not in the defence. You've been trying for that second cover for God knows how long. You spotted that early and you said, you know, we need someone there. I was always, I think, hopeful that Nelson would be the man that would cover him. It's not happening because he doesn't trust him. You're right. He doesn't trust those youngsters. It's a shame because maybe in another universe he may have done and they could have ended up being amazing players. We don't know, do we? Until they're given minutes, you just don't know. And I don't think these players have been given the time that they potentially needed to establish themselves as a threat to that position. And I think maybe that could be another reason, Jack, why we've seen a little bit of fall off from Saka, because he's not had anyone really challenging him. I know with Martinelli, you could argue that, look, Trossard's there, you know, knocking on his door. And so he's kind of got that. But if you sack Saka, he's got, there's no one, is there?
Yeah.
He tried Jesus for a couple of games, which he didn't do too badly, by the way.
No, he's playing on the right. Yeah.
But he's not the direct threat, is he? He's not, no. There's no one there to say, do you know what, Saka, if you have like a 6 out of 10, I'm here and I'm going to get picked and you're going to lose your spot. And that, if you haven't got that, you're comfortable, I think, even if someone is professional as Saka. And I'm not saying Saka believes that, well, no one's going to take my place so I can have a day off. He's not that kind of person. But it's still, I think, subconsciously, if you know you've got someone knocking on your door, I think you just up your game, or you try to anyway. I'm not saying, again, it's because of him. I think it's the defenders that have been hounding him and, you know, making him, suffocating him, essentially. But still, I think he needs that challenge. Personally, I think every top player needs a challenge, mm-hmm. just to keep them on their toes. So I think you're right. I think we need to invest when we do invest at the front, 100%. I think striker, right wing, you know, there was this talk about the left back as well when things were not looking good, in the sense that Zinchenko wasn't doing what he's supposed to be doing in a defensive capacity. Tomiyasu was out. We didn't know how long for. We're thinking, oh my God, we're going to fall short. Kiwior, is he ready to play in that position when we need to? Don't know. Timber's out anyway. What do we do? So I think, but now, and I'm not just saying it's a one game changer seeing Zinchenko bit, because I still think he can't defend, Jack. I'm going to be completely honest. I think he's a rubbish defender. He cannot defend. And I think we still need someone there personally. But I think the most important is the forward. You're right. We have to invest in the forwards because you said it, goals win you games. Not the defence. Defence is clearly important. Of course it is. We can't be leaking. What? How many did we leak last season? 40-odd goals? I don't know how many it was.
Yeah.
Can't be doing that if you're going to win a league. Of course you can't. But they both have to go hand in hand together. If we're polished in the back, we also need to be polished in the front. And as I said before, if we sandwiched last season's forward prowess with this season's defence, that's a title-winning team.
Yeah.
But yeah, we haven't got the balance right yet.
No, exactly. And like you said, game changers, great point. I mean, you know, sometimes when you watch us from the bench, and Saka's had a few games this season where you could have pulled him off, but you don't know who to pull him off for. You don't know who to pull him off for that can still do what you need them to do down the right and make it function like he does. And there isn't someone that naturally falls into that area that he truly trusts. And he knows he doesn't trust it. But for us to do anything, even alone, it looks like we've got to ship someone out. at the very least on a loan. So I would hope, you know, lead into the Forest game, because that's close to the end of window at that point. I personally would hope to see people offering for the likes of Eddie and Nelson. You know, even if it's loans with options and obligations, if it meant, if we started to actually act on that, it would give me a hint that we're trying to get someone in, even if it's on a temporary, short-term basis. Because to me, one, Eddie's not good enough, and Nelson, he doesn't trust enough. So, like, I wouldn't have an issue with either of those being moved on. And I don't think they'll be here beyond the summer anyway. So, yeah, we've got to find something different. There's a lot of loans being moved around. There are a lot of, there's so little money going on in the Premier League at the moment, but there is a lot of loans. My assumption is the Premier League's going to kind of take off in the next week and it's going to be kind of a mad one in the end of the window. You're seeing Newcastle trying to sell players to their own ownership in Saudi and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. So it will start flowing from somewhere, but if we're going to do anything, we're probably doing it in the last 48 hours of the window, and it's probably a loan at best, I think. But I hope that it's a loan on an attacker and not a defender, but from reports, that doesn't sound very likely. So that leaves us with what we've got. The best scenario of what we've got is to start to sort of use players in slightly different positions, like Havertz up into the nine and Jesus out on the right wing, and maybe get the likes of Smith Rowe more game time, and even Vieira, you know, some more game time there to provide us a different option. Because the one thing I would say about Vieira is he definitely trusts him more than someone like Nelson. You know, so there's, you know, and he is creative. He is very creative. I don't think physically he's there at all, but he's very, very creative. He's almost the exact opposite of Havertz, to be honest, which is odd because they both seem to, early in the season, fill the eight role, which was really strange. I was like, they're exactly opposite. One can win duels for, you know, forever. The other one's weak as, you know what. But one can't create a thing. And the other one, all he does is create. All he just gets the ball, tries to whip in every... Very opposite. So it's strange. I'm not really sure of his vision for Vieira. I don't think it's quite working out. But, Neil, it was a great win. It was great to get back to winning ways. Let's hope it's the start of us moving in the right direction. But we do have a really tough game coming up next Tuesday against Forest, right? So away. So what's your predictions for Forest away? Partey might be back in the squad. Rumours have it he is going to be, but we don't know with him, so I wouldn't count on it. But what's your prediction? What's your first scorer?
Yeah, we can't count on Partey as much as I want to, because I think he'd be perfect for that game, wouldn't he? Yeah. It would be perfect to help us, but I it's a tough one, Jack. It really desperately is. They've had our number over the last few seasons, and they're going to be up for it again. And we struggle at Forest away, and I think my heart would say 2-1, my head would say it's saying 1-1. Unfortunately, I just hope that we can take something from this Palace game. Although, you know, a couple of the last two goals were almost academic. I just hope we can take something away from it. If Forest set up to play a little bit attacking and they don't just you know, nullify Saka and Martinelli, maybe we'll be okay. But I even then, I've just found that we struggle there for some reason, and I don't know why. I think it's one of those grounds that have been a bogey team for us in recent years. So I don't do draws, although I said my head is saying 1-1. So I'll go with my 2-1 gut feel. And I just hope that we can just... I don't care how we get the points. I don't care if it's an own goal. I don't even care if Rea scores by a fluke. I really don't care. Just want to win, get the points, and then we are in a better position to face Liverpool. Because if we don't get the points, Jack, and Liverpool win again, I think 8 points will be too much. I really do, even at this stage of the season. The league has become so competitive now that... I remember in the olden days, you could probably lose 5 to 7 games and still win it. I think these days that's gone. You know, you're pushing it if you're losing more than 4 to be with a chance. And we've already lost 4. And we've already lost 4. We can't, you know, and 8 points, you know, again, back in the day may have been a number you could kind of get back. But these teams are so damn good. You know that Man City played better in the second half of the season. They've got Kevin De Bruyne back. And it's like, they're going to be better than they were in the first half. So you've got that component. Liverpool somehow have come from I don't know where, and they're doing well. And so we've got not just one team to worry about, we've got two. So even if one falls away, the other one's doing it. We have to win somehow. I don't know how. I don't care how. 2-1. And first scorer, do you know, I'm hoping it's Saka. He needs a goal as well. Saka 2-1.
Yeah, I'll take that all day, mate. Yeah, absolutely. I'm worried already. But I'll go 1-0 Arsenal. 1-0 Jesus. I'll go 1-0 Arsenal Jesus. But yeah, it's hard because you don't really know before. They've got a fair amount of players at the African Cup of Nations, but I think there's a good chance quite a few of those might be back, as a few of them probably knocked out. I think Ivory Coast, they've got a few players there and they got knocked out and things like that. So you expect them to come, you know, are pretty strong. And they've got, it's hard to know, before they've got so many players. They signed so many players, Nottingham Forest, which is why there was, you know, they're in for punishment, I think, with FFP, because they had too much going on. I think they didn't sell Brennan Johnson in time or something like that. But I remember last season thinking there isn't a day that goes by that Forest aren't signing someone. So it was kind of crazy.
It was crazy, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I remember mentioning it. A few Forest fans hit me back with it. They were like, you don't know what we've had to overhaul. And I went, I don't care. That's a ludicrous amount of players that you brought in. I mean, it's unbelievable. I don't know how that's...
Was it in the high teens or early 20s?
Yeah, and it wasn't like they'd spent that. They'd spent a fortune on them. Like, they'd spent a hell of a lot of money on them. They hadn't sold, like, drastically well. So they'd spent a lot of money. But, yes, yeah, so you're right. It's a really tough team to go and play against. But, yeah, I'll go, fingers crossed, 1-0. And hopefully we'll be back after that one. And then it's obviously, you know, leading into the weekend's game, which would be another big one. But we can't look beyond Nottingham Forest. It's a really, really tough game. Yeah. So we've got to look at that one first, and then fingers crossed we get to discuss it with smiles. But Neil, thanks so much. We are at Purely Arsenal FP on Twitter, and we are Purely Arsenal on YouTube. Subscribe to us there. You can find us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP. You can look us up on your Apple Podcasts, your Spotify. Just type in Purely Arsenal there, and you can hear the dulcet tones of Neil Shah and myself, or, you know, a few of our other guests. James pops on when he can. He's a busy boy. And we get a few other guests on at times as well. Okay, Michael Harris, hopefully back soon as well. That'll be great. But Neil, fantastic. Back to winning ways. Let's keep it going, mate. Let's keep going. Long way to go. I'll be Arsenal.